This is episode 372 of Tech Talk Radio, Australia's premier tech talk show, which aired on Monday, February the 20th, 2012.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio in your backyard and worldwide on the pod.
This is an exciting day in the history of the NBN.
Copyright.gov is down. FBI.gov is next to go.
The world is in trouble. There is no Wikipedia.
Who here has an iPhone? Who here has a BlackBerry? Who here uses Gmail? Well, you're all screwed.
So we'll be monitoring this very closely. No one will pay for these rights if they can't find a way to make money off them.
Copyright is such a big issue. Legislation as 2006 is already outdated by the new technologies.
On air, on the internet, and on the pod, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to this week's edition of Tech Talk Radio. I'm Andrew McComb. This week on the show, the big supermarket chains step up to the mark, technologically speaking, putting the power of grocery buying in the palm of your hand. As we suspected, the Optus victory over the AFL and NRL over rights seems short-lived as Australia's federal court gears up for an appeal. Telstra offers a new range of international data roaming caps, and I hope you're sitting down because for $1,800 Australian dollars, you'll receive a massive 976.6 meg, which has an included value of $15,000. Yes, you heard correct, $1,800 for a gig. Oh, and it doesn't roll over. Also this week, another nail in the coffin for BlackBerry. There's Twitter news, Apple news, tech protests across Europe, and Vodafone lost an embarrassing amount of customers in 2011. Adam Turner has a spotty view from the couch, Lena has the latest in gaming news, there's gadget, website and odd spot of the week, as well as that must-have app for your smartphone or iGadget. First up though, let's start the show off with this week's news roundup from the Tech Talk Radio News Desk with Dr. Ron.
This is Tech Talk News.
This week on Tech Talk News, criticism over the government's set-top box scheme for pensioners. NBN Co. announces 8 new towns and suburbs in its rollout plan for 2012. The rumoured iPad 3 release date draws closer. And Telstra's new data roaming plans offer 1 gigabyte of data for $1,800. Welcome to Tech Talk News. The Australian newspaper last week reported that every set-top box delivered under Labor's digital TV rollout scheme could be costing the taxpayer an average of $698, almost double the government's original estimate, and more than 30 times the cost of a box bought from a department store. The Australian reported in May last year that the Communications Minister, Senator Stephen Conroy, put the average cost of each installation at $350, but recent figures provided to the newspaper by the Digital Switchover Task Force show that the initial budget of $69.5 million had delivered nearly 77,500 installations, which works out at an average of $897 per installation. Mr. Conroy said the figures had no validity and that the claim of a blowout was false. He said the figures mix actual costs with estimated costs and are intellectually dishonest. Mr. Conroy also added the amount arrived at by the Australian includes departmental costs for the management of the program. The set-top box scheme is intended to ease the financial burden for the elderly and welfare recipients in switching from analog to digital television. A further 8 more towns and suburbs will be connected to the national broadband network over the next 12 months. The government's management company, NBN Co., released a rollout schedule in its first quarterly update last week, which included Corrimal in New South Wales' Illawarra region, Ascot in northeast Brisbane, Melbourne's inner city suburbs of Footscray, Coringal and Keysborough, and Bellarive, Claremont and South Launceston in Tasmania. NBN Co.'s CEO, Mr. Mike Quigley, told a Senate committee hearing on Tuesday that customers in these towns and suburbs would be connected over the next 12 months and that more premises would be connected to the NBN in areas where the rollout had already begun. In December last year, the 4,000th customer was connected to the NBN and Mr. Quigley said an additional 1,500 customers had already been connected this year. On the 8th of February, Mr. Quigley announced that delivery of high-speed internet to remote communities in Australia had progressed with the selection of Space Systems Laurel to build 2 next-generation Ka-band satellites. But Shadow Minister for Communications and Broadband, Mr. Malcolm Turnbull, was critical of the deployment and said in a media release, "Every announcement by NBN Co. so far has involved its spending excessively." Mr. Turnbull also described the announcement by Mr. Quigley as wasteful and late. The 7th of March is being touted by many as the expected release date of Apple's iPad 3. Popular Apple news site Mac Rumors says it's confirmed the iPad 3 will have a high-resolution Retina display with twice the linear resolution of the iPad 1 and iPad 2. Other speculation suggests the device will feature a quad-core A6 processor and possibly 4G or LTE networking. Apple has made no comment on these rumors and is yet to make an official announcement about a media conference or a successor to its iPad 2 tablet computer. Apple is under increasing pressure from competition in the tablet space, with Amazon's e-book reader, the Kindle Fire, jumping to second place in tablet sales in Q4 of 2011, with 4 million units sold in December alone. Apple's share of the tablet market fell to 62% last year, down from 87% in 2010. And Telstra has released new international roaming data plans, which it says will benefit customers and avoid a $15,000 bill shock. The 7 new data roaming packs start at $29 for approximately 10 megabytes of data and work their way up to $1,800 for approximately 1 gigabyte of data. Telstra currently charges $15.36 per megabyte for data roaming in popular countries overseas. The new data packs expire after 30 days and any unused data allowance is forfeited. IT News says Telstra's new data plans are expected to provide relief to businesses worried about excessive inadvertent data use while employees are overseas. The announcement came last week after Australia's competition watchdog, the ACCC, announced that wholesale ADSL prices would be reduced on Telstra's network. ACCC Chairman Mr. Michael Schaper said last week that end users can now expect to have access to a greater range of competitive fixed-line broadband internet service offerings. The Age Tech last week reported that the ACCC's ruling will force Telstra to reduce the wholesale price, which ISPs pay to resell ADSL, and could see Telstra lose about $55 million a year in revenue. I'm Dr. Rom, and that's your tech update for this week.
Previously on Tech Talk Radio.
Oh, by the way, happy World Radio Day today.
I need to get like a Samsung Galaxy Tab, I think.
I hear this. I believe this.
Didn't you take the day off like Bob Hawke said?
You know what freaks me out?
I don't mean your average latte-sipping, MacBook-wielding, metrosexual digital hipster.
The law of the land gives me that right. I'm watching less and less free-to-air television. It's just atrocious.
Where is it going to stop? Speaking of spam.
Yeah, that's local. Another example of the same stupid thinking.
Be able to swish your cells around the spreadsheet.
How do you know?
You used to make mixtapes. You'd have a blank cassette.
Yes, I look forward to your angry letters.
Well, the AFL would like the new technology to continue to run things the way they ran them.
PVR is not the issue here.
Yes, it is.
No, it's not.
Yes, it is.
No, it's not.
Yes, it is.
Entertaining, informative, and independent.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
No, it isn't, Graham.
Isn't it?
You're supposed to say, yes, it is.
Oh, yes, it is.
Weren't you listening?
No. What?
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Tech Talk Radio. I'm Andrew McComb. Graham is in this evening. We'll probably continue our discussion very shortly from where we were last time. That's excellent. Lena has joined us in the squeaky seat again. How are you?
Hello. I'm good. How are you?
Yeah, good. How was the house move?
Exhausting.
Yeah.
But it's done.
Yeah, you got news about your internet too, I believe.
Yes.
You turned to the dark side. We'll talk about that later, shall we?
Yes, we will.
Okay. And coming in on the bench, because someone is not quite with us this evening due to issues of...
I said you weren't allowed to play that.
You're all class. Yeah. You really are.
Gross.
Poor old Dr. Ron is not feeling too flash this evening and...
Flush.
Flush. Yeah, he's checking out the porcelain as we speak. So I think some salmonella going around his place at the moment. But hopefully we wish you the best, Dr. Ron. He'll be out there. He might even be in the chat. And if my computer actually speeds up. He is?
Excellent.
I've got to log in there yet. I'm still downloading emails for the Coro
segment.
He said
in capital letters, gross. So I think he takes umbrage with that sound effect.
What was that? Okay. And coming in off the bench, greatly appreciated for the very first time for 2012. Is Adam Turner.
Evening all.
Yay!
Ooh, Adam. See, look.
Was that applause or more water? I wasn't sure. That's definitely applause.
That's applause.
Is it? Okay. How you been, Adam? What's the news? What did you do? Did you get good Christmas presents? We haven't seen you since last year. Sorry.
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah?
I got Star Wars on Blu-ray.
So that was high definition nerdness.
Yes, high definition nerdness. And then discovered that... a lot of the new Blu-ray movies have DTS HD soundtracks, but no Dolby Digital, which is fine.
What does that mean?
They're the two kinds of audio the high definition soundtracks you get on the movies, right? And that's fine because they say, well, if you don't have stereo that does Dolby, that does DTS HD, you can just do normal DTS. Unless if like mine, your amplifier is so old it doesn't have DTS at all,
at
and
all.
You've only got Dolby Digital. And next thing you
that's
know, you're
problem,
watching,
isn't it?
Yeah, you're watching Star Wars in Blu-ray, beautiful picture, and you're back to stereo sound, maybe done with Dolby Pro Logic. So it looks better,
but that's
and
not
sounds worse. That's not the movie's fault. It's my fault because my
I thought George Lucas might have changed it.
My home theater was
came
off
that,
the
that was going to be that was gonna, that's the least of your problems with those Star Wars Blu-rays.
Oh yeah, there is a bit of that too. The new noises
and Greedo shooting first. And,
I don't even start me on that. But yeah, so I'm going to have to look around. I did discover a workaround thanks to someone who left a comment on my Sydney Morning
Herald.
There's
a workaround for Greedo shooting first?
No, unfortunately not for that. You can use a PlayStation 3 to turn a DTS soundtrack into a Dolby Digital soundtrack on the fly.
Yay!
Really?
Yes. Yeah, you got to tick a few boxes and muck around with it, but it will do it. And I hadn't found my DVD player won't do it, but it will do it. So if I want to watch a Blu-ray movie and have proper surround sound, I've got to put it in the PS3 until I get around to upgrading my home theater system to do DTS. Anything bought in the last 10 years will probably do DTS. And mine was secondhand when I bought it 10 years ago. So, yeah, well, not second, X demo. So I didn't quite make the cut for DTS. So keep that in mind if you're looking at upgrading the Blu-ray. Just check what format your surround sound supports.
Yeah, because those amps aren't cheap, are they? Well, the good ones
yeah,
anyway.
Yeah, but the thing is you don't have to buy a brand new one. And you might not need to buy one with HDMI switching, for example. If you're happy with everything the way it's plugged in, you could buy an old one, not use the video switching, just use the audio. Mm. So, yeah, do a bit of research, but you don't necessarily have to spend thousands and thousands. And you can start with maybe just a good amp and two front speakers and then upgrade over time. You don't have to go out and buy the whole box and dice on day one.
That's good. So you can buy stuff separately.
Yeah, you'll get a discount when you buy it all together. What the best thing to do if you're doing a home theater or a digital home sort of renovation is plan out everything that you think you want. And then even if you don't buy it all at once, at least you're buying it with the other stuff in mind so you don't get halfway through and realize you've got to throw away everything you just bought because it's not compatible with everything you want.
Mm.
And the other thing is if you're doing a renovation, that's the time to put stuff in. Put in Ethernet cables, put in extra power points, stuff that you might not need for a couple of years because it's a lot cheaper to do it when the plaster's off the wall than to get someone to come back and do
put
it
later. Put in big buffy speaker cables to the back and all that sort of stuff,
Cables to the back, lots of power points, all that kind of stuff. Anything you think you might ever want that's going to need a power point or a cable, Ethernet to the bedrooms and the study and the lounge room, all of that.
Cheaper to buy some extra cable than to just run the cable later on.
And cable's much more reliable than wireless when it comes to video streaming. Wireless really should be your last choice if you can't use cable.
Yeah, those double brick houses can be tricky.
Yeah.
But that's not flash for wireless either, is it?
Even if you've got a two- or three-story house, you can run into a lot of problems with wireless, just dead spots and stuff like that.
Mm.
They've got some good wireless boosters now. If you've got an Apple router, you could use an Apple TV, an Apple AirPort Express. Or
that's what I've done.
A friend of mine bought this Netgear's got a Wi-Fi something blah, blah, blah extender, but it's under $100. And a friend of mine bought one because she bought a new Bravia that's got all this, a new Sony Bravia with all the video streaming in it, but the television was too far away from her wireless network to get good video streaming. So she's got this Netgear box that she's, I don't know where she's put it, somewhere in the house, like halfway between the wireless point and the television. And now she can watch iView and all this stuff on her TV because the connection is good enough. So there's a few things you can think about like that to improve your streaming.
Excellent. So Chrissy was good.
No, that was my Christmas.
The Blu-ray, kicked off a good discussion about how to look what to look out for in future-proofing your surround sound requirements. Oh, that's good. Well, anyway, welcome in for 2012. Thanks for coming in off the bench on a Dr. Ron free evening this evening. I'll get my chat loaded up fairly shortly. I'm still trying to get some email in at the moment, but that's life. Living on the edge of today's modern internet, I think.
Mm.
All right. So, yeah, what's news this week?
Speaking of internet.
Oh, yes.
Speaking of internet.
Yeah.
60 megabits, bebe.
60 meg?
Yep.
Oh, yeah. Do tell. You moved house and?
We did. We moved house and they already had Optus cable all hooked up.
Yeah.
So we decided to sort of run with that and just hook that up and get an account with them instead of we were going to do naked DSL with IINet like we had in the old place.
Yeah.
Where I was getting 2 megabit per second.
That's a no-brainer. Stick with Optus cable if you've got it.
So it was already there and ready to go. And IINet said if we wanted to get a new account set up at the new house, it was going to be 12 days without internet. And as someone who works from home, that's absolutely not acceptable.
Not possible, really, is it?
No. I could tether to my phone, but there's only 1.5 gig or something, I think, on my phone, so it's of data, so I would burn through that pretty quick, over 12 days.
That gets you by in case of ISP outages and the fact that you're sitting in a cafe and you go, oh my goodness, I need to check something.
Yeah, but it's hardly something you can really rely on. So, yeah, we were really excited to get 60 megabit.
Yeah.
I screamed. Yeah, you done?
I'm very happy for you.
Did you get more bandwidth? Because download bandwidth,
yes.
If you know what I mean.
Allowance.
Because allowance, that's the word I'm looking for.
Yes, I did. I got more gigs.
You download more faster. Have
you
noticed?
Yeah,
the bigger GBs.
I got more GBs.
Bigger GBs, yeah. That's
I got all the GBs. I only had a 50 gig plan at the old place, and now I've got 500 gig.
Yeah.
So I've
Does it cost you more
upgraded.
Or cost you less?
It's $79, and we're paying about $59, I think.
At the other place.
Yeah.
So you're 20 bucks more.
Yeah, no brainer.
Do you get anything else with it, like a free phone or anything like that?
No.
No?
No.
The absent Dr. Ron in the chat is...
I'm there now.
Yeah, on his 2 megabit connection right on the fringe of his exchange's coverage area is saying he will absolutely not provide you with any tech support.
No, that's fair enough. That's fair enough.
I think he might actually mean or don't expect it from Optus.
Oh, Optus is tech support.
That's right.
He had an issue with Optus tech support. That's right. Yeah.
Hopefully it all goes well.
If they tell you to delete all your mail, ring one of us first.
Oh,
all right.
Yeah. I wouldn't be saying yes to that. No, I would be saying I don't think so, buddy. Can I talk to your manager, please? And then you get angrier and angrier and angrier until you talk to the person who actually knows how to run the joint.
And they go click and fix the problem. Why didn't that other person do it?
Just get really mad. Say things like sparks, fire. Smoke, burn, and you get escalated straight up to the top.
Just jump on the Twitterverse. It'll do it all for you.
Yeah.
Mothers were mentioned.
Yeah. Oh. Yes, mothers
oh,
were
really?
Mentioned. No,
need I ask. Mm. All right, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio. Andrew, Graham, Lena and Adam in this evening. What are you pointing at your headphones for?
There's no sound coming out of them.
Oh, is that
mine
why?
Mine are too loud, so if you could balance the two out, that'd be great.
Right. Swap in
mine
ear
are
each.
Just right.
Mama bear, Papa bear, and all that sort of stuff. Yeah, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show.
Tech Talk Radio.
You are indeed. Have you sorted out your headphone problems yet? No? Okay. She looks pretty cute just sitting there with the headphones on and no sound in it, doesn't she, Graham? It was good.
Aww.
And Adam's complaining because it's too loud. I'll turn it down a bit. Turn the guest on. Yeah, there you go. Hopefully that works. Anyway, news this week. Adobe has issued an emergency Flash patch. Are we still using Flash?
Yeah, some people are.
Really? Okay. Well, Adobe pushed out an update the other day because there's several vulnerabilities. The update version for Windows, Mac, Linux, and Solaris includes a fix for cross-site scripting flaw that has been used in targeted attacks against other Internet Explorers on Windows, etc., etc. So if you're using Flash, by all means, do your updates on all platforms. Always good to keep your updates updating and all that sort of stuff. So, anyway, that's the first bit of news for today. The other bit of news, Sony and Ericsson have split.
Oh, have they?
Yes.
Splitsville.
Sony Splitsville. And Ericsson have had an acrimonious divorce. Is that the right way, or is that too negative?
Was it friendly?
No.
No, then it was not.
Sony are now known as Sony Mobile Communications. So all the smartphones like the Xperia S, the Xperia Ion, Eon, whatever you want to call it, there's no longer a Sony Ericsson anymore. Well
that might be good. You might get better integration between Sony phones and other Sony gear.
Yeah.
Because I've found them in the past. It's like, oh, no, sorry, they're Sony Ericsson, we're Sony. We might have the same sort of name, but we don't really play nicely together. You'll have to talk to them about that.
The handsets always felt like more of an Ericsson than a Sony, didn't they?
Yeah, because Ericsson with a phone maker, yeah, with a background.
Ericsson are now the back end. They go and put all the network. That's what Mark does. He deals with
they
all those
the
sort of
high
people
end
and
stuff,
do all the linking and the back end stuff that we use through the handsets, which are now Sony. So, there you go. In other news, a student was jailed for hacking Facebook, I saw. In one of the news reports today, watch out, Sheldon. Because didn't Sheldon hack Leonard's Facebook to update his marital status recently?
Oh, that was an old episode.
It was an old episode. But anyway, a British student has been jailed for 8 months for hacking Facebook despite claiming that he intended to help the social network improve its security.
Oh.
Isn't that what all hackers do?
Yeah, I broke into the bank for the same reason. They didn't see it that way.
Yeah, I came in and nicked something out of your till and ran out of the door. I thought you might want to highlight some of your security issues. Yeah.
He's a benevolent hacker.
Maybe. Anyway, his name's Glenn, and he's 26, and he did it from his parents' home, in the basement of his parents' home. So
master criminal.
Yeah, as you do. So that was interesting. Now, other news today too, which I saw hit the wire, is Optus has bought the Perth-based Vivid Wireless. Now, is Optus going down a rampaging path? They're not on a rundown, guys. These are today's.
Oh, I wasn't sure if it was a fantasy thing or not.
Oh, no. Optus has bought the Perth-based Vivid Wireless for $230 million in a deal that's expected to provide a foundation for the number two telco's forthcoming LTE mobile network. So, yeah, I don't
think... They're going to start rolling it out in March, I think, or March or April in the Hunter Valley, I think I saw. And I think they're mainly interested in them for the spectrum. For the spectrum rights that they have.
Is that why? There's always been an ulterior motive, I would have thought, with that particular organisation. So, Vivid Wireless, formerly known as Unwired. Remember them? They used to be owned by Channel 7. Whatever happened to that idea?
Oh, yeah, that was a long time ago.
Wasn't it a long time? Yeah. In Melbourne, they were going to do back channel stuff and all sorts of interesting things.
I always thought they might be offering a wireless back channel for TiVo. It never happened, but it would have made perfect sense.
Yeah.
Because with a TiVo, you've got to have broadband or your TiVo doesn't work. And so... That kind of thing would make perfect sense, but like a lot of big media organisations might have all the pieces, but not always that good at putting them together.
Well, Seven acquired the group, Unwired, back in 2008, so it does seem like that was 4 years ago now for the small price of $127 million.
Ow.
That's not just loose change either, I wouldn't have thought.
No.
Anyway, so Optus has now got hold of Vivid in Perth. I don't know, that probably won't mean much to anyone on the East Coast, but I don't know how it will affect Perth people. Obviously, you might be able to get... As Adam suggests, LTE on those frequencies that Vivid potentially now Optus own.
They might be based in Perth, but if they own the frequencies Australia-wide, then that would make a lot of sense, I suppose.
Maybe.
What's the collective noun for people from Perth? Perthians?
Perthites?
Perthsuasians?
Don't know. You'll get angry emails. You'll know soon enough.
You will. Someone will certainly pipe up on the chat and do that sort of stuff. Now, Dr. Ron normally does Coro. But actually, Dr. Ron isn't here, so I haven't managed to print out anything. Graham, have you got the Coro up there? Because my machine here is not doing...
Oh, we'll see what we can find.
If you've got a couple, that would be quite handy. So, all right, are we ready? You got it? Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay, here we go.
Your say on Tech Talk Radio.
Correspondence. From let's start with this one from Phil, also known as Primal.
Hi, Primal. I think he's in our chat this evening too.
Hi.
Who says, good morning, gents and the squeaky one. We love you, Lena.
Thank you.
It's just the chair.
Squeak!
Yeah, it's not Lena that squeaks, it's the chair.
Yeah.
I thought as an avid Androider, I should add my two cents in the ROM flashing discussion from last week's show. He apologises that he wasn't able to be in the chat room due to other commitments. It sounds like there's been some great success stories recently from TTR listeners in the ROM flashing adventures.
We have. We've Love flashed our ROMs.
That because it means people are starting to understand the ecosystem that is Android, and it's about freedom of choice and not doing what you're told to or forced to by the manufacturer. Whether that manufacturer be HTC or Motorola or anyone else in particular that says, yes.
Also, Android has a problem, though, in that when you're waiting for... The reason why you have to flash your own ROMs is because you're at the mercy of your telco and the handset provider to wait to get your updates. Yeah.
And that's exactly why
iPhone,
we did it.
And I'm not saying that iPhones are better, but an iPhone is different in that at least you're only at the mercy of Apple. And you're not at the mercy of your telco when you're
waiting
for updates.
Telstra or Apple, your choice.
Yeah.
You can be at the mercy, of Telstra, or you can be at the mercy of HTC and Vodafone, or HTC and Telstra.
Well, the people making your apps.
And the hardware providers have got motivation too. If you bring out a new phone with a new operating system on it, then chances are you go buy that because it's so frustrating to update your old one as it grinds into a halt.
Mm.
Yeah.
Graham, we interrupted you.
Okay, he was going to go on. What he'd like to add is that if you're feeling adventurous and looking down the path of flashing your phone, I recommend, this is Phil recommends, that you take the time to install something called Clockwork Mod Recovery onto your phone before you do anything else.
Getting technical.
And you'll find that if you read up on the flashing procedures, you'll find references to this Clockwork Mod Recovery. This is something that you do when you root your phone before you reflash it. And that'll add that if you Let me read on. If you really... I'm sorry, I haven't read these in advance because normally...
So this is like a disaster recovery tool if everything goes
that's
bad.
Right. If you really get into it, the money for the pro version will pay for itself the first time you...
You brick a phone.
Your phone. Yeah. And yeah, if you experiment, you will.
Have you ever
Sounds
bricked
like
a phone?
Good advice.
I haven't Great. Yet. No, I've only flashed my phone once and I didn't brick it, but yes.
I've bricked iPhones but managed to bring them back. Yeah.
Have you?
There you go.
How do you bring them back? Do you have to go right back and...
Oh, it's all push this and pull that and hold your breath and stick your tongue out and yeah.
Yeah, but what
Isn't
about
it
the
just
iPhone?
Factory reset?
No, I've managed to brick them better than that.
Good lord.
This was hacking the first 2Gs that came over from the US.
Oh, right. Yeah. Once you weren't really supposed to have in the first place.
Before the really smooth jailbreaking was around, All right. Phil's point is a very good one. He says, back up your data in big letters. There's nothing worse than flashing a ROM and finding it's not working, not stable, and going back to a previous ROM and have to reinstall all your apps. So, yeah, we kind of knew what we were going to lose when we did ours. We hadn't backed everything up, but we knew how to get everything back. In my case, I knew that all my mail and calendar and contacts and so on were in the Google ecosystem, so they would come back to my phone as soon as I reconnected.
That's really handy, isn't it?
But not everybody's in that same situation, so think about where your data is, think about where your contacts are, think about where everything's stored. And make sure that you don't end up in a situation where you can't get stuff back. Clockwork Mod Recovery is one tool that'll help you get in and out of trouble. And another one is called Titanium Backup, which again, you have to pay for the full version and it only works really properly if you've rooted your phone. Again, it's if you've got stuff on your phone that you really can't live without, then that's the way to go it. Phil moves on. I've paraphrased a lot of what he said here, but anyway, aside from this, I'd like to say it's thrilling to hear new people adventuring deeper into the Android environment and making it work for them. Congratulations to all concerned. I'm certain that the TTR team, regardless of phone, tablet, PC, iOS or Mac device, will back me up on these points, which
we basically have.
Yep.
A lot of technical, they've probably been complacent and lost critical data at some stage. Yes, we've all done that at some point. Cheers, guys and lady. Keep up the awesome work. Love the show. Phil, Primal.
Primal's in the chat, so if you want to ask him questions, he's in there spruiking Clockwork Mod.
The other thing I really want to say on the topic of rooting phones and flashing ROMs and all that sort of stuff, whether you're working with Android or whether you're jailbreaking your iPhone, whatever else you do, we talk about doing these things fairly in a fairly blasé manner on the show, but seriously, there is always the danger that you will destroy your device and it will become unusable and you'll lose all your data and you'll lose your phone and it'll become useless. So just be aware that you are taking a calculated risk when you do these things, and Tech Talk Radio and 3WBC and none of the other stations absolutely no responsibility for what might happen if you choose to travel down this path.
But if you're like us...
CBS cares.
If you're like us and you're like living on the edge, it's a lot of fun.
It is a lot of fun. Yep, you just got to be aware of the risk you're taking, that's all.
And rooting is basically a Android term, and jailbreaking is the equivalent in the Apple term.
But they're both the same thing.
They are.
Yeah, it is. It's exactly the same effective process. It's gaining super user access to your device. Yep.
And every
root
time,
access.
Every time you actually jailbreak an iPhone.
For people in the Windows world, root is what Unix calls the super user. In the Windows world, you'd be used to the administrator being the super user.
So it's having the right do whatever you want.
That's all it is. That's really
at your
all
own
it
risk.
Is.
At your own risk.
Mm. Which is why I like my manufacturer forcing me not to do silly things that will brick my phone.
You don't like living on the edge.
Just not with my things that I rely on, like my phone.
One person's jail is another person's walled garden. If they're happy to live...
I love my gated community. See it as a jail.
If you're happy to live in there, then that's
I'm
your choice.
I'm thrilled. Exactly. And I think everyone should be able to make their choice the way they want to.
Mm, very good.
If you want to brick your phone, go for it. But I'm not.
There you go.
Moving on.
And that's fair enough. GJMCN, who's a regular contributor, sent a lengthy email about the evils of the various football leagues.
Yes.
Right on, brother. Preach. Yeah.
This is referring
to an amen.
A debate we had, Graham and I, last week on the show.
which is available for download if you look at the right places on the website.
It's high rotation on some stations.
Many lawyers are listening to
it. Group hug, guys. On subject of football, I agree with Graham Callaghan. He goes on with a lot of detail, which I probably...
I'm sorry, I wasn't here last week. Unfortunately, we don't have time to read out.
Same.
I would have had you back, man. I would have had you back.
We gave you the opportunity because someone was moving house and you said, no, I got better things to do.
he's basically lamenting the commercialisation of football and unfortunately the... brouhaha we got into last week is a symptom.
It wasn't a brouhaha.
It was.
It was a lovely discussion that we had.
I've brought my riding crop in this week to make sure that these shenanigans do not happen again.
So thank you, GJMCN. He says, pressing on regardless for your kind words and your email, even though I'm not going to read it all out. What else have we had? I'm sorry...
chat.techtalkradio.com.au is where we're currently at the moment. If you regularly listen to us as we go to air live on Monday nights, come and visit us there. If not, don't forget to hit the forum afterwards, forum.techtalkradio.com.au, and share and chat and all that with all the others.
Fantastic. You want me to continue?
Yeah, keep going. Yep. I was just filling for you there.
That's fantastic. ADEBear71. I don't think he's given a real name here. He is also commenting on AFL and so on. He doesn't know why the internet isn't subject to anti-siphoning laws. I'm not sure how it could be.
Because it would require the people who make the laws to understand the internet.
That's not the only problem. These laws prevent Foxtel or any non-free-to-air station from purchasing all the TV rights to listed sports. If Telstra is the only telco allowed to stream live sports, it isn't exactly the same. Isn't that exactly the same as Foxtel owning all the live rights? No, it's not really, I'm afraid. And the reason is because there is no equivalent of free-to-air over the internet. There's no sort of...
No, we're talking about how to get the signal from A to B.
Yeah.
A can be from a transmitter distributed via radio waves to your house. That's what we call free-to-air. And then there are other ways, which is... not via airwaves.
The very good point that he makes is, he says, another thing, the NFL in the United States does a really good job of streaming the games live to subscribers in any country. Why can't the NFL and AFL follow this business lead? It's not like they are the first sport in the world to have these exact issues, and that's absolutely right. I did notice that reading up a bit on the recent Super Bowl, which is the major American football game that was not long ago, that they actually rotate the free-to-air coverage between the networks so that they all get their turn to do the free-to-air coverage, and that the game is streamed from the NFL's website itself.
Mm. So that's a great system they have.
So on the internet, it's actually the league that does the streaming, and it doesn't matter what... service provider you're on, you can connect to the stream, and that would seem to make a lot more sense, and presumably they would get a significant amount of money for advertising and so on that stream or on the page that the stream is on or something like that. So,
well, also it opens up a worldwide market too. You're not just limited to a terrestrial service in a certain particular part of the world, geographically locked.
That's
anyone can
right.
come in and do it. And look, you watch what will happen in the next 5 years with AFL and NRL. It'll probably go down that model fairly shortly. And don't forget, the end of this year, 2012, the whole country will now be digital, which means we won't have these issues with people putting sport on main channels and sub channels and things like that. So we've got that to look forward to. And also the rise of the NBN is going to mean that technically a lot of people in Australia are going to be able to see good quality video streamed direct to their house. And you've got the other the players such as Foxtel, and Foxtel will probably make a big move in sport because they need to secure their base, and that's Telstra.
Yeah,
so
Foxtel are going to get slaughtered when more of this buy what you want and don't pay Foxtel $60 a month for stuff you don't want comes along. That's what you can do now on the phones that you can't do everywhere else. I can get a Telstra phone and say, I just want to watch one game. Here's $5. Not, here's $50 a month because I just want to watch one game. And there's more of that coming through IP services, and it's going to destroy Foxtel's existing business model, and they're going to have to move with the times.
But even as Graham was saying,
we're talking 5 to 10 years. We're not talking 12 months.
Yeah.
But it's the NBN.
It'd probably be quicker than that, the way things are jumping everything at the moment.
Yeah, but people, you know what digital hipsters are like. They always say it's going to... he dies for the button. They always say it's going to happen
soon. I don't mean your average latte-sipping, MacBook-wielding, metrosexual digital hipster.
Did you get any emails over that?
Just a few.
Hey, Adam. Yeah. Do you like coffee?
Maybe.
Is that a MacBook sitting in front of you?
Yeah.
I rest my case.
Yeah. That's only two parts of the equation. Yeah, these things don't change as fast as some people think they will. But yeah, the 5 years, I reckon, Foxtel's business model is going to have to look a bit different. And they've said they're making changes, but how many of those changes are cosmetic is yet to be seen. But they can't keep going the way they've been going. The business model will not work in the future.
I was having a discussion over lunch with a certain person in the industry who, let's just say he was fairly high up in the networks. And yeah, the ever-changing face of the technology is becoming a real problem for them at the moment, even all the program producers and things like that. It's now starting to affect what and how and why they do things. So it's an interesting space, also for sport, for everything right across the board. So especially as things get faster and geo-blocking becomes more, I guess, people can work around things. So well, it's going to be an interesting time.
It's funny that you should mention geo-blocking because people in Australia like to use VPNs to access overseas services. But people were leaving comments on my Sydney Morning Herald blog going, saying that if you live overseas, there are AFL services you can subscribe to watch games on the internet, which you can't watch if you're in Australia. If only there was some way that you could be in Australia and pretend you were somewhere else.
Oh, really?
You could theoretically watch these services.
Proxies!
Yeah, well, this is what people were saying today. So, yeah,
it would be interesting. You should go read your blog on the Sydney Morning Herald.
I've not investigated this option, but it is an interesting idea.
I use proxies all the time to get geo-blocked, around geo-blocking.
I've just got a VPN service that I subscribe to, so I don't make
And you're not proxies. Robinson Crusoe.
Andrew's got a very clever DNS-based proxying thing.
That's the one that I put you onto, yeah.
It was, and it won't work on Optus.
What?
Aww.
Really?
Truly. Well, I tried putting... I'll just fade the microphone faders down so you can't hear this, but I was around at a colleague's place the other day and we were tinkering with it, and you can't get into the Optus routers to actually change the routers at a... at a incoming level to the house, so it goes to all devices. Yeah. So you actually have to painstakingly go through all the devices in your house.
You could put your own router the other side of the Optus router.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. You just put in your own router. You turn the Optus router
into a modem.
Yeah.
And you use your own
router. I'd only ever use it for what I use it for. I'd only ever do it on one device anyway, just on my MacBook in the kitchen.
That would work too.
Watching YouTube stuff. So I don't need it to be on all my devices.
There is so much more on YouTube if you're in the US. You can watch TV shows and all,
the UK?
All kinds of stuff.
The channels. Yeah. That'll hit here shortly too.
All of Channel 4 is on demand on YouTube all in the UK. Yeah. It's fantastic.
All right, this is Tech Talk Radio. In this evening is Graham, Lena and Adam. I'm Andrew. And Ron is in the chat if you would like to. He's there as the absent Dr. Ron. and it's probably good that he is at technological's
at a
arm's length.
A long way away, yeah.
Yes. So anyway, we'll take a break and we'll be back with more after this.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Adobe's going to stop doing Flash. That's pretty good. What lengths would you go to watch free-to-air television?
Not me.
I was at GCAP, which is the Game Connect Asia-Pacific conference.
I told you it was GC something.
It's exciting times, isn't it?
The ACCC doesn't do anything either, to be fair.
And Andrew's just grimaced because he's one of those web designers that thinks that he should have control over everything about the way a website looks.
Entertaining, informative and independent.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Just in case you missed something, want to hear a discussion again, or even if you wanted to indulge in the Tech Talk Radio extended mix, then subscribe to the Tech Talk Radio podcast. You'll find a link on the website, techtalkradio.com.au, or subscribe on iTunes. You can also have a repeat of the current show streamed live to your device by visiting stitcher.com or by visiting the Tech Talk Radio small screen site, m.techtalkradio.com.au. Tech Talk Radio, it's everywhere you need it.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
You learn to take everything on the chin on this show, don't you, Lena?
I'm going
to
get Graham a wrestling mask for Christmas.
Actually, Lena's brought whips in.
This is getting a bit scary.
Yeah, it
one,
is.
Don't go nuts.
It's becoming one of those podcasts.
Yeah, one of those. Hey, you've been shopping lately? Any of the big brand, big named outlets and things like that?
Yes.
Yeah.
Have you, Woolies have got a new app.
That kind of shopping.
Yeah, Woolies. And I'm sure Coles have one too, but I've been tinkering with the Woolies one. Now, I was going to make this app of the week, but I wanted to talk about it, so I thought I'd bring it further
up. I still feel
show.
Like we've lost something now that we have to have Woolworths instead of Safeway.
Yeah, I'm with you.
It was only in Victoria. Everywhere
That's
else
right.
was...
That was made Victoria special. We had Safeway instead of Woolworths.
Tassie had Purity, it was called, and it looked the same as a Safeway, but it was called Purity.
Did they?
Yeah.
It doesn't scan as well. We're Purity, the fresh food people.
Yeah, no, not quite.
No,
double
no.
entendre, really, isn't it?
Mm.
Yeah.
No.
Anyway, the reason why I thought I'd have a quick chat about the Woolies. The Woolies app that you can download online, for no other reason, and it'll do everything you expect it to do, like do your online shopping and all that sort of stuff. For us blokes, it's got an added advantage, and that is when the missus rings you up and says, can you go to Safeway's on the way home and pick up the milk or something more exotic that you would like, you know,
some
never
kind
know.
Kind of basil.
Yeah, chili paste.
You never know where it is or whatever it is like that. Well, what you can do is you can actually go say, well, you get me the empty tube of basil or whatever it is like that and scan it with a little barcode reader.
Basil doesn't come in a tube, dear.
It does. Some
you can. You can get the squirty one.
You can get squirty ones.
Ew.
Yeah. But anyway, my point is...
Moving along.
My point is when you scan the item on the barcode thingy on the side of it, and you're logged in to wherever your closest supermarket is, it says, oh, that's in aisle 4. And I thought, yes, this is really good. Because when she says, can you go and pick up that and there's an issue, that's in aisle 4, dear. I said, yes, thank you very much. So that's why I thought I'd have a really good chat about it.
What's wrong with that, Graham?
You shouldn't need to go to aisle 4. You should be able to scan it and say, yes, buy, and it should just arrive at your door.
No, but they want it on the way home.
Oh,
I need it in 45 minutes because I'm cooking. Get it for me now.
Yeah, that's it.
Oh,
that's
right.
You send the glimpse, they ring you and say, on your way home,
we're
can you visit?
We're talking real time, yeah.
Yeah. And you go, okay, well, I'm going past the Middle Camberwell Safeways. It's in aisle 5. Oh, good. And while you're at it, send me a picture so I know what I've got to buy.
Yeah, I've been there too. How many people
big
do you see on
my
phones
local
in supermarkets going, I can't see a blue tin. I can't see a blue tin.
Yeah, I've done that as well. Yeah. And there's other people in the shop looking
right
at you.
In front of your
and there's
I'm
a
sure.
guy just away from you going, I can't see a red tin.
Yeah.
And every now and then you realise you're looking for the same thing and it's like form a tribe and, you know, just work your way around Safeway till you find what you want.
And because you've created such a scene, some other shopper will come and go, is this what you're looking for?
Yes, thank you very
thank
much.
You.
And then you find out that the tin wasn't blue at all. It was a kind of a bluey green that was more green.
Because the idiots who make it change the label to be new and trendy. I hate it when they change the labels on things.
Get off my lawn, Adam Turner screams.
But I just learned what it looks like and now you've changed the label. That's dumb.
I don't like change.
Look at Vegemite. They're smart.
That's
right?
Branding for you.
The jar doesn't change. Right? I can walk into any supermarket and find
by Americans.
Myself. But I can find a jar of Vegemite in a lineup. I can't necessarily find all the other stuff I want because the idiots change the labels.
Change is bad.
Can I ask another question completely unrelated? And I do want to come back to the Safeway thing. Do you feel insecure now when you go out with your smartphone trying to find a place like a street address? Because we don't have Melways or street directories in our cars anymore, do we?
I do.
Yeah, you need one because sometimes the phone lets you down.
Yeah, well, that's what I was finding. I was just going to say, because I haven't had a paper directory in the car for some time now.
Oh, I do. I keep one in the car.
And you got burnt?
Yes, I've been burnt. Yes.
Yeah. I've just bought a new TomTom, but I do still carry the Melway. Yeah.
It's worth having.
Yeah.
Still got one in the back of the car.
I think I've learned by my taste. I'll take your advice on board.
The thing that you don't get from the navigator or from the phone, the navigation on the phone, is a kind of an overview of where you are.
Exactly.
You can't look at the map and see all the ways every street connects to everything else. You know, you could live two streets away from somebody and never know how to get from A to B, never have a concept of how the streets are laid out.
I rest my case about aisle 4 at Safeway's then. You need to know where to go.
But years ago, coming to your old studios, I'd only been there twice, I got there and realised that I'd gone to the wrong address.
Oh, there was two addresses, were there?
No, well, I'd had it written down wrong or something.
And
I couldn't figure it out on the TomTom. But when I looked at the Melways, I could like look at the whole big suburb in front of me and go, oh, yeah, I can't remember going down that street. And I sort of figured it out. There's way I could have figured it out from looking. And this was like 7:55, right? There's no way I could have figured it out from
the
phone. Yeah. There was no way I could have figured out from the phone where you were. It was only by looking at the big picture that I could figure it out. So, yeah, after that, I always keep a Melways in the back.
Or I just said on the chat, my Melways hasn't updated itself once since I bought it. Abandonware.
Good call.
Or if it's so dog-eared, it doesn't work. You open it up and it falls. Oh, the page you want's missing. That's another doozy.
And you go like that and the map won't resize. It's good.
Scrolling.
Getting back to the supermarket apps, Graham, you were saying that why wouldn't it be delivered for you? Well, in Sydney and in Melbourne at the big railway stations, there's now a virtual supermarket. Do you know what a virtual supermarket is?
Yes, I have seen one. I haven't seen one in person. I've seen photos of one on a railway station somewhere in Asia. It would have been either Tokyo or Korea. I imagine, yeah.
Well, for those of you who are going, what on earth is a virtual supermarket? It's a supermarket where basically they take pictures of things and stick them up on a wall.
Yeah.
And you go up there with your, like, it's the one in Sydney and Melbourne has, I think, around about 250 products. And under each product, they're obviously common products, they have the barcode.
So you grab one of those and one of those and one of those.
Yeah, you grab your app and you go, give me one, give me two, give me three, give me four, whatever it is. And with a bit of luck, it'll get delivered very quickly to your home address.
It's the
luck
that worries.
It might even get there before you do.
You want to see the picture?
Oh, yeah, is that a picture?
This is really good for radio, but yes, you can see the picture.
They stick the picture on the wall and it actually looks like when you're in a supermarket and you've got the fridge up against the wall.
It's like you're just standing there, but it's 2D.
And it'll help you find the thing in the blue packet because it has a picture of the blue packet.
It's like you're walking through a supermarket in Quake and when you get too close to the walls, you realize it's flat.
Yep. It's exactly like that.
You don't bang your nose against
textured.
Well, I think, is this where we're going with technology and supermarket shopping? You're at a virtual shopping centre now at the station
on
the way home.
Some people hate supermarkets and will do anything to stay away from them. Hi, sweetie, if you're listening.
Can I have one other gripe about supermarkets? Which completely. Certainly. Have you noticed that those who are no longer working, i.e. retirees, love shopping on weekends?
First thing in the morning.
I haven't done it first thing
in the
morning.
Go in the supermarket before,
can
like,
can a retiree
9
shopper
in the morning.
Shop not on the weekends, please? So us people at work.
And don't go and get blood tests first thing in the morning. Some people have to go to work and you're queued up for the door. You got all day, all right? Go and get a coffee. Let me get my blood test. I'll go off to work and then you can do whatever you want. That and the bank. It's like you've got all day. There's no rush.
Wouldn't it be nice if the blood test place that you have to go to was open 24/7 like the supermarket is?
Oh my goodness! You can do it online.
Like it. Yeah, you go down to 7-Eleven at 3 in the morning, you get some barbecue shapes and a blood test.
That's it. Thank you.
Can you have a blood test after you've had barbecue shapes?
I don't know.
Probably put you off the scale.
No, except you don't buy it from 7-Eleven because the Coles just around the corner is open 24 hours. So good call.
Should we have a view from the couch?
Yes, please.
Or should we have a
I thought he was here live.
A computer games. I mean, he is here live. Ooh. What should we do? Which button should I press? Computer games or
close your eyes and just pick one at random.
Surprise me, as Fat Tony would say.
Yay!
Tech Talk Games with Lena Van Deventer.
I've got a lot this week because I wasn't here last week. So I've...
No, you weren't.
They've rolled over.
Have they?
Yep, the stories have rolled over.
Good, off you go.
Have you heard of Kickstarter?
Yes.
Yes. It's a crowdfunding website based in the US. And
Startups?
Yes, or just a project done by already established people. Mm. Double Fine Productions, the studio behind Psychonauts, Brutal Legend, Costume Quest, Stacking, a whole bunch of excellent games, have broken Kickstarter records for crowdfunding the highest amount of money in the shortest amount of time on the site with a goal of 400,000. They wanted 400,000 for their project. They reached it in 8 hours and 11 minutes.
Wow.
So the way this works is they say, we're going to do something. We haven't done it yet, but we need the funding. Can you kick in a bit of money now to help us get started and then we'll look after you later?
Pretty much.
So it's an IOU with a promise.
Yeah, someone who puts the money in is called a backer. Because they're backing the project, they're backing the thing. And they are promised a certain amount of goodies for backing the project as well as getting the actual thing funded and off the ground.
It's venture capitalism at its best.
It is. As we go to air, the total amount raised is $1,991,611. And they wanted was 400 grand.
What do they do with the balance? Go to the pub?
Well, they're actually going... They've announced... Where am I? They've announced that now they've made much more than their target. They're going to add support for PS, Mac, Linux, iOS, and some Android devices. In addition to all backers giving more than $15, they'll get a Steam code for the game and DRM-free copies.
A Steam code? That means you can buy it on Steam, is that right?
Yeah, you get it for free, on Steam. And there's a sliding scale of goodies on offer for the more you pledge. So you can get your name in the game if you give a lot of money, or you can get, a whole bunch of different things.
Oh, so it's a bit like a telethon.
Yeah. A little bit,
Does your name scroll across the screen? And Lena in Box Hill says $22.
Double it if we read your name out on the air. Hi, Lena.
Which it's left a few interesting questions in the industry. People are asking whether it's a valid publishing model for big name developers. Obviously, because Double Fine have got a name for themselves for making good quality games with a high level of polish, everyone jumps at the chance that they're going to be making this double fine point and click adventure game. So everyone's getting really excited about it. Obsidian have already asked people on their forums what they would fund to see developed. So creative director Chris Avalone, I don't know how to say it, called Double Fine's success inspiring and said player-supported funding is proof certain genres aren't dead and sequels may have more legs than they seem. The idea of not having to argue with a publisher is very appealing, he said. So I think, yeah, it could be changing things a little
bit.
Game
changer.
It could be. I think publishers will still be required. There's a lot of work that they do, especially for the little guys. But it is very interesting. Yeah, hopefully the publishers won't pick up on the fact that they can get money at the start as well at the end and then start to really take advantage of this in a bad way. You remember that Steam hack?
It would only a publisher doing that and doing it in a way that was unfair to the contributors would only get away with it once.
I think so. Yeah, I think so.
Unless they were so big they could just keep screwing
you. Well, that's the thing. Yeah, there could be a really big carrot.
Not thinking
on a stick.
Of any Sony's in particular.
No. It just depends on the carrot on the stick, I guess.
Yeah, that's right. If it's done well, it could be very, very good.
And publishers have a lot of money, so they could really say, "Well, if you give us this much, we'll give you this amazing merchandise pack," and everyone goes, "Okay, yes, please." So you know, it could be taken advantage of, but we'll see how that sort of ends up going.
But at this level, I know that sounds really good. You listed that the game that they were developing was going to be then available for a whole number of platforms that it previously wasn't.
Yeah, and voice acting.
That's just going to employ developers. That's going to pay the wages and put food on the table of people who develop for these platforms, and that's only going to lead to a better future for the whole industry as well.
Exactly. And the other really cool thing they're doing alongside that is that they're also doing a making of documentary alongside it to sort of see how a game is made from start to finish, which is really nice because it's usually quite a secretive world, game development, and a lot is misunderstood about it. So that'll be really cool to see that come around as well.
And that'll be good for the investors to see what their money was spent on. Yeah.
And to have a more realistic idea of how this actually works. Yeah. Remember that Steam hack that was last year?
Yeah.
Late last year?
Yeah.
Valve have done a lot of investigating into what actually happened.
The owner of Steam?
Yes, Valve. Yeah. They say there's no need to fear that their personally identifying information or credit card data has been compromised. Today, Valve head Gabe Newell issued an update on the situation, saying that the company and outside security experts have found no evidence that the hackers stole information from Steam's database. All they got was a copy of the list of all Steam transactions between 2004 and 2008.
And were they stupid enough to store passwords in plain text like our friends at Sony?
No, they were not. They learnt pretty quick, I'd say.
there was a story around at the time that the file that they stole had encrypted versions of credit card numbers in it.
Yes.
And that because they actually had the file, that they would have an infinite amount of, they could just throw resources at it until they cracked it, and then they would have credit card numbers.
Yes, that was what has happened, they've said. That the only information they could really gather from it that wasn't encrypted was the transaction list. So they'd just know what you'd bought. But they've also said the data included usernames, email addresses, billing addresses, and credit card details, but they were so heavily encrypted that because none of the information's been used, it's most likely that they're not going to, if they haven't done it by now.
I'm not sure that I would, you know, because if you've got the file, you're not accessing it online, you can throw infinite resources at trying to crack it.
Yeah, I'm with Graham.
But it's a pretty safe bet that if they were going to do it, they would have done it by now, don't you think?
It's also a pretty safe bet that Valve ain't going to tell you the truth.
Well, that's a bit cynical.
Well,
conspiracy theory.
Let's put that another way. It's a pretty safe bet that they'll put the best possible spin on it.
Thank you. That's what I meant.
Yeah, that's fair. The stolen data did not include Steam passwords, which was a rumor at
good.
The start.
That's a good thing, isn't it? My question is,
you should make sure you use a different password for everything. So when one password does get stolen, you're not vulnerable everywhere.
They've come out and said it probably hasn't had a breach of security, but keep an eye on your credit cards anyway, which is a good piece of advice.
Good advice on any day, yeah.
Yeah.
What was I going to say?
You've had a mental blank.
I did. I had something in my head that I was about to say and it just disappeared, but it's come back, so that's all good. The real question that I was asking at the time, and I would still ask, is why does Steam need to keep the actual credit card number that you've used?
Why actually, that's a good point you make,
Why can't they use it, send it off to the merchant
system and then not keep a record of it, not save it in a file?
You're not supposed to either. Well, in Australian laws, but obviously, as we discussed last week, actually, no, that was on ABC Radio. You're at the whim and call of the credit card providers in the country in which the data is stored. So in Australia, you're not allowed to. But I don't know. It might be different in other countries.
Maybe. But, and a lot of places, yes, it's convenient. It's, you know, on the Android market, it's got my credit card saved so that when I buy something on the Android market, it just charges it to my credit card without me having to key it in again.
Mm.
But it does mean that if they do get...
It does prompt you, though.
It says,
I'm going to charge credit card ****1234.
That's right, but it's remembered it. Yeah. Whereas at other places where I go, I have to key in my credit card every time because they don't keep a record of it, and that's a lot safer.
Mm.
So it's a little bit less convenient, but it's a lot more secure. So this is something that users of these services can ask. You send an email to Steam support saying, why are you storing my credit card number when you could make the transaction and then forget the credit card number and just ask for it next time I buy a game?
Yeah, well, it might be a level of security that they have to meet in banking service. I don't know, unless they hand pass it to the bank or something.
As Elroy says in the chat, it's all about one-click purchasing.
Mm.
Yep.
And that's what everybody wants to do. And if you want one-click purchasing, well, then they have
then
to
you've
remember
got to be aware
card.
That your credit card yeah. is so going to be vulnerable.
People are trading security for convenience.
That's always...
Which is the story of technology.
The trade-off is always between security and convenience.
Yep.
It's not just technology. I mean, not putting seatbelts on. It's the same sort of thing.
Oh, that's like, a trade-off between safety and stupidity. Yeah. But, okay.
But you know what I mean? People don't put it on because they say they can't be bothered.
Yeah.
It's like, look at the risk and reward thing there.
Yeah, yeah.
It's the same sort of thing. Mm. The R18 legislation...
Oh, that thing's still going.
Oh, it's going to be going for a while.
Oh, really?
According to the federal government, gamers can expect an R18 rating for video games on January the 1st, 2013.
Oh, but think of the children.
We are. That's why we're doing it.
Oh, yeah. That's only 10 months away.
And
that's
still, the ABC last week in their current affairs, ABC Radio Current Affairs ran a story last week saying how bad it was and how it was going to... Yeah.
Yeah, it's terrible.
I mean, you just got to think about it a little bit.
Engage brain.
Yes,
please. Engage brain.
Didn't it get put out to a parliamentary committee?
Again and again.
The legislation has been introduced to federal parliament. So it's
out to a committee again.
Probably.
Yeah, I think I saw that it's been put out to a committee.
It's going to come down to the independents,
they
apparently.
Just
bureaucracy is going to kill us at the end of the day, isn't it?
Mm. Yeah.
Do we push this button? Hang on, let's put it out to committee.
yeah, exactly. I want to have a tuna sandwich for lunch. Oh, we'll go to committee.
Yeah, we'll take a vote on it.
Yeah. The BAFTA British Academy Video Game Awards nominations were released as well this week. I won't go through them all because there's a lot of award categories and whatnot, but I will put
any
them
Australians
on
in there?
The forum. No.
Local guy?
Yeah, we only care about Australians.
Yeah. Portal was on there. That made me happy. I'm just scrolling through. No, I don't think there's anything. Oh, L.A. Noire. Yes, there's L.A. Noire, which was
Didn't
Team
that
Bondi.
All end in tears?
It did. It ended in lots of tears.
Wasn't good.
But the game was still, you know, fairly good. Just flicking through really quick. Yeah, L.A. Noire is the only thing I can see that I recognise as being immediately Australian. There may be some little iOS games that are in there because Australia is quite good at making really good little iOS games. The other exciting thing... Official Minecraft Lego is on the way.
Ron,
I wish you were here. I wish you were here, Ron. It's times like these where I miss you most. The Lego Minecraft...
Can we have a special nerd alert for Minecraft nerds?
It's just a sound of digging. The Lego Minecraft world is composed of 480 pieces. Don't put that on my segment. I'm formally taking umbrage. 480 pieces.
That was Dr. Ronnie. He missed that bit.
And includes the player Steve and a creeper and will cost approximately $35. Some places, such as Jinx, are currently taking pre-orders. Stop playing sound effects, please. And Sony says not to get your hopes up for a PS4 announcement this year because they're focusing on the Vita. Or the Vita.
They can only screw up one thing at a time.
Exactly, yes. And they're doing a really good job with the Vita.
Multitasking's really not Sony's speciality, is it?
Or tasking of any kind, generally. But, so they won't even be announcing a PS4 this year. They're just going to totally not talk about it at all. So that's a bit disappointing.
Is it?
But, yeah, well...
The PS3 is a damn fine thing.
Really feeling old and creaky,
I'm about to say.
It's not, but... it's time. It's time for the new consoles to start being developed. Because
they freshen up their homepage.
I'm sure they're being developed. I'm sure somewhere locked in a room they're making it now. But
yeah, the Xbox has a code name Durango, apparently.
That was a film, wasn't it?
That's currently...
Rango.
It's a state,
Rango, sorry.
A state in Mexico. And the Wii U's being in development and everything. So it's like, we want the PS4 as well,
please.
It
makes more sense to get a new Wii because there's so much more the Wii could do. Compared to what
everything,
the first...
Graphically,
the
jump from, online.
Like high definition for a start.
Yeah, the Wii could make a huge jump from the first to the second, whereas I don't think there is as much to demand. I don't think people are sitting around going, oh man, this Xbox 360 and PlayStation 3 are so slow and old. It's like Super Nintendo.
It's not, have to buy a Mario
it's not so
again.
Much from the player's perspective that we want a PS4. It's the fact that the developers are reaching a point where the technology can only go so far.
Yeah.
They want to do more. And you can see it in the amount of releases that are coming out. It's slowly dripping off because they're saying, don't bother, because by the time we release that, everyone will be developing for the PS4, so just wait and we'll get our debug kits. And once we've got our debug kits, we can then start developing and blah, 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 blah. And that takes a really long time as well to save up for all those development kits and to get them and to source them. So it's more the development community, I think, saying hurry up and give us a PS4.
You've got the collection of them all at home, haven't you?
I do.
Which one do you use the most?
Out of my consoles?
Yeah.
Probably the Xbox 360.
Yeah?
Mm.
Okay.
But
you don't have young children, do you? See, we're
yes, I do.
But they don't play that yet.
No, he doesn't.
I have, but you're not of game playing status yet.
He plays the iPad.
Like my sub 10-year-olds, they just can't get enough of the Wii.
The Wii, yeah.
The Super Mario's and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, mine love the Wii.
Yeah.
Yep. You know, it's good for kids.
The PS3's been relegated to iTunes. iView, so they watch all their back-ordered, you know, ABC TV stuff.
It is a good media server.
That's terrific.
Mm.
Absolutely.
Much better media server than it is a games playing machine, yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah. I've only got two games on my PlayStation 3, and every time I go to play either of them, it downloads 15 gigabytes of updates, and I have to wait for about 3 days to reboot it.
He's got Frogger.
Yeah. And Pac-Man.
And Pac-Man.
No, I can tell you what I've got. I've got Gran Turismo, whatever the...
Five.
And I've got the demo of Lemmings.
Oh, excellent. Yeah,
good choice. It'll be the Lemmings one that'll do it.
Good taste.
And wasn't it?
Oh, look, that Lemmings music is fantastic through my big sound system, through my big 2.1 subwoofer system.
I'm dying for
wonderful.
Lemmings on
the neighbors
iOS.
Like, what the hell is that?
Yeah, they're 3 a.m, yeah.
I feel like throwing myself off a cliff.
And I don't know why. So, yeah, there's lots of stuff happening in games at the moment, but there's also lots of stuff not happening in games at the moment. Oh. Everything's a bit slow to take off.
All right, well, we'll watch this space because no doubt you get more of those venture capitalists happening over there in the US and bingo, it'll all sort of
fantastic.
Kick in.
Fantastic. Lots of Lemmings fans in the chat.
Oh, really? I've alt-tabbed away from that for a moment. I should
anyone
come back
who
to the
doesn't
chat.
Like Lemmings is not my friend.
No.
Ooh. No. I didn't know it was available on the PS3. Did you just download it? Or
I downloaded
it?
The demo, yeah.
Oh, okay.
And I'm having so much fun playing that, I haven't bothered paying for it yet.
There's a Flash version. You can play the first 10 levels, I think, online for free.
Oh.
A Flash version.
If you're into such things.
There was an iOS version, and I miss it because there was a copyright kerfuffle and it got taken down and all this. But I really miss it because it's perfect for a touchscreen. Absolutely perfect for a touchscreen. Lemmings. Mm. Just so intuitive and perfect. But hopefully we'll see it again soon on the iOS.
How are you going to get a new iPad when they come out?
Not a new iPad, no. I've got an iPad 2, and I waited and didn't get an iPad 1. I got an iPad 2, so I'll wait till...
Really? How often would you update them? Every second year, you reckon?
Yeah, every second iteration, I seem to do.
Well, that means I'm scheduled for an iPad 3, because my iPad 1's got dropped the other day. Got a big dint in the corner now.
Ooh. Ouch.
Yeah, that's children for you. Actually, no, that was a wife for you.
Same with the phones as well, I reckon, every second generation.
Yeah. What, you know, as long as your contract, really.
Yeah.
Like when you think about
That's the thing. Tablets aren't under contract, so there's no established behavior.
Yeah.
Where everyone sort of knows, okay, you get a phone, you get it for 24 months, so I'll get the iPhone 3G, I won't get the 3GS, and then I'll get the 4, I won't get the 4S, and then I'll get the 5.
Mm.
But most people don't have tablets. You can get them under contract, but most people don't. Mm. So there's no real incentive when there's less incentive when the 2 or the 3 comes out to go, hang on, I've got to get rid of my old one and get a new one.
Yeah, it's all features-based decision.
Yeah, it's a bit... Yeah. Apple has to push a bit harder, at least in this kind of market where we have that particular buying behavior, to convince me, because I've got a 1 and I didn't think there was enough to upgrade to the 2, But I still, the 3's going to have to do something pretty impressive to get me to buy it, because I still don't do that much with the 1. I've got it more for work than anything. I bought it for work. I didn't buy it because I thought, oh, I can't live without an iPad. So they're going to have to do something pretty impressive to get me to upgrade it, because I'm happy with it. And it's not like I'll get it for free anyway because I'm already paying $50 a month to Telstra. Yeah, what the hell, give me the new one. So I'm not going to go and replace it. If I've got to pay full price for it.
Yeah, I seem to do every sort of second iteration with my iPhone, so I guess I'll do the same with my iPad.
Because you're on a plan, so it costs you no money to do it.
Yeah, I got the iPhone 3G, and then I got the 4G, and I'll get the,
you're waiting the 4, for the 5G.
Sorry, the 4S. Ah! No, not the 4S.
I did that. It's a Freudian.
The 4. Oh, I keep doing it. And I get mad when other people do it.
The 4!
The 4! I get really mad when other people call it the 4G, and I just did, and
I know.
Need that riding crop. Where is it?
Like, you need a sound effect for a slap, like a big backhanded slap.
Okay, we'll work on that one.
Yeah.
All right. So, yes.
That's games.
Good. That was games with a bit of extra stuff. Unless, while we're talking about telcos, Telstra have released their new range of mobile roaming data packs.
Oh, please do tell.
Now, if you travel overseas regularly and you want to think about getting a plan, well, don't. The short and sweet of it all of it is that for $29, this is a data pack only. This is international roaming data only. For $29, you get a whopping 9.8 megs, which is included value of $150. 9.8 megs. In my land, that'd be probably half a dozen emails with footers and a picture. And that's all you get for your international roaming. At the other end of the scale, there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 packs to choose from, ranging from $29 to $1,800. Now, the $1,800 Australian dollar version has included value of $15,000. Whoa, what a bargain.
Ow. Not. Cost more than the flights probably did.
Absolutely.
It'd be cheaper to fly back home and make a call and then fly back there.
It would, wouldn't it?
First class.
Pop home to check your email and come back again.
And come back again.
Now, the approximate value for your $1,800 is sub 1 gig, 976.6 meg, thereabouts. Thank you, Mr. Telstra. I don't know where we would, what we would have done without you with that one.
Use other telcos.
Anyone with half a brain would just buy a prepaid SIM when they got there.
Exactly. That's what I did in the States, except in the US when I was there last, they didn't actually sell a mobile broadband plan, so I had to pinch someone else's. But normally in the US, you can stick an antenna up anywhere and you'll find someone with a wireless connection which you can plug into. That's what they do over there. Shopping malls, airports.
There are lots of good references around for that. A friend of mine is the editor of Australian Business Traveller, I think it's called, and they have lots of good stories on things like, I'm going to a certain country, which prepaid mobile should I get, what can I get before I go, what can I get when I get there, and if you plan ahead, you can save yourself an absolute fortune. Roaming is a trap. Don't go anywhere near it if you can help it.
Oh, I think I read something, don't quote me on this, one of those things in passing, that they're looking to abolish roaming between Australia and New Zealand. I think I was talking about this to Dr. Ron the other day. So
that'd be good, because I go to New Zealand quite often, and I always have to buy a prepaid SIM when I go over there.
Yeah, well, theoretically, there's no reason. Like, if you think about it, we're in the east coast of Australia, and New Zealand is closer to us than Western Australia is. So you sort of think, well, what's the problem here? But it's just because there's no technical boundary between the two countries. Like, there's no technical boundary between here and Perth.
Isn't there a big cable being put down between Australia and New Zealand at the moment? Like a really, really amazing one?
I think there was talk about that some recently, but I remember one going to Guam or somewhere which was going to speed things up.
Oh, that was the one that that Internode were part of.
Yes, it seems to ring a bell.
Was it a dream or is that a real thing or did I just remember something that wasn't real?
Hang on.
It's been happening quite a bit lately.
Okay. New cable twist. To connect Australia and New Zealand, ITY, 17th of January, by Stuart. Highway,
Huawei
Marine has announced that it will undertake a seabed survey for the planned OptiCore cable to link Australia and New Zealand by the end of 2013. Stuart, you got a typo there. It says 2103.
I'll be waiting a while.
I don't think it'll take that long. He's email him after the
years.
Show.
That's
but there's also the there's the Southern Cross cable that I think runs across the Pacific.
There's a few
cables around. There's one that runs up towards Japan. There's one that runs out towards Hawaii.
Yeah.
There's a few of them.
The one that, remember when, it was a couple of years back now, there's a cable which connects pretty much the Southern Hemisphere to the Northern Hemisphere, which goes up, I think, through the Middle East, and someone broke it. They remember a boat dredged it up.
They did the gardening and I remember severed the cable with a spade.
It was a boat and an anchor going through the Suez Canal or something like that, I think. I can't remember it exactly, but I remember it did have...
Dropped an anchor on it, yeah.
Yeah, it had massive effects to us here connecting to Europe.
There's got to be some website where you can see all the underground cables all over the world, surely.
They must have signs.
Don't dial before you dig, dude.
Yeah, dial before you drop anchor.
It's the Pipe Pacific has got the PPC-1 cable that links Sydney to Guam, and once you're into Guam, you then connect into the US. So there's a few around, and every time someone puts another one of these in, it's great for Australia because it introduces more competition in moving data in and out of the country, and therefore should bring down prices.
When I was in, answer your question, Lena, when I was in Google a year back or so, I was wandering through building 42 in the Googleplex, and they have just that, but it's real time. They can see the real time data on all the international cables traversing the planet.
That's fascinating.
And it was yeah, you could spin the world 3D. I don't think you can get this. Well, you might be able to somewhere. Someone will tell us. But you could actually see on their modeling, you could spin the wheel. You'll see pictures of it online, I'm sure. And the spikes that come out from the planet show you the data throughput, and you can see all the hot spots where data is flowing at any one particular time in real time in the world.
I'm Googling global subterranean cables.
Yeah, absolutely.
I haven't looked yet, but Warlock says www.submarinecablemap.com.
Oh, hey. That figures, doesn't it?
Warlock has the best Google foo out of anyone.
But he's not trying to talk on the radio at the same time. That's part of it.
Oh, yeah. I can see them all. That's fantastic.
Oh, that is nice. It looks like a map of the metro, like the London Underground or something.
Submarinecablemap.com.
Mind the gap.
Mind the gap.
That could have been a good website of the week. Oh, well, we've got it now.
Sorry.
There already is one from Australia and New Zealand, from Sydney to Auckland.
There's one from Perth. You can see one coming out of Perth.
Up to Indonesia.
And you can see one, two, three, about five or six coming out of Sydney.
I think that one from Perth to, is that Indonesia there? It's going to, is actually three in one or three or four in one.
Oh, you can even click on them and see information.
Oh, there you go. Follow along with us, people on the radio. Submarine map.
The cable length map. Submarine and the name of them. Very cool.
Yeah. Now you know.
And who owns them? You can even see who owns them.
Now, moving on, Vodafone lost a truckload of customers. A metric shed load, correct.
Not Imperial?
No, we were discussing this during the last break, actually. But yes, 450,000 customers moved and churned. And they've all gone to Telstra because...
I reckon so.
Yeah. Because why wouldn't you? One of these networks. But I've still noticed that a lot of people that are on the old Vodafone network are still... sort of bemoaning some of the issues that plagued the network from its early days. So I'm not sure how well they're going with their upgrades, but that's an awful lot of customers to lose in the last part of 2011. The mother company wouldn't have been too impressed with that because they're a multinational company. But remember when it all started out? Vodafone. We had, I'm trying to think of the guy's name who did Vodafone.
TV Live on Stage.
Yeah, that too. Oh, yeah, it was... no, but the guy who did Vodafone, TV, they were a couple that sung song. They came into the studio,
Who was the guy who did the original Vodafone website?
I'm trying to think of his name. Sorry.
I'll find it.
Yeah, I'm sure you will. We had him on the show.
Warlock will have told us in the chat.
Scott and Shona.
Yeah, Scott and Shona.
That's
Live on Stage.
Yeah, but I'm just trying to think of the guy who did... he was so angry about being on hold with the Vodafone help desk for many hours that he built a website while he was on hold, and it became Vodafone.com. If you go to the site, it'll probably still be there and all that sort of stuff. Yeah,
the site is definitely still there.
Yeah. So I don't know what else has happened in that sort of stage, but I don't know. Will Vodafone fail? Will Vodafone ever recover from such a damaged, dinted reputation? I guess they'll win back when it's a bit like politics, really, isn't it? You don't win elections, you lose them. And Vodafone lost customers.
But politics swings. You have your good years and you have your bad years.
But don't you do that with telcos too, based on funding?
No, but Telstra's always going to be better than the others technically. In terms of the quality of the network... I don't see a point in the near future, no matter what Optus and Vodafone say in their press releases about how fast they're going to be and all this and that. I don't see a time in the near future where one of them will actually have offer better network performance than what Telstra does on NextG. I'm talking about more consistent speeds, less dropouts. It takes a lot. It's not just a swing in 6 or 12 months. Telstra has put in the hard yards with NextG. And, I mean, sometimes the customer service is appalling. But if you want the best network, it really is a no-brainer.
It's their cash cow now. Yeah. They don't have many cash cows left. You know, the fixed dialing and all those sort of things and all those olden day things have all gone by the wayside now. And the only thing they've got really to hang their hat on now is mobile network. So,
and they built a good one.
They
did
indeed.
Give them credit. They built
absolutely.
A good one.
Have you had the pleasure of playing around with any of the new LTE stuff on the Telstra network yet? Any of your day-to-day
I've got a HTC Velocity 4G, I think, at home.
Because the dongles, they've been walking out the door.
Yeah, and I haven't
unbelievable amount of those have been sold.
I haven't played around $299
outright for the 4G dongle from Telstra.
But it only works within 5Ks of the
CBD. No, it falls back to 3G outside.
Well, that's what I was going to say next. You only get 4G speeds within 5K of the city.
Careful.
So, and then... You
and then it works perfectly
3G.
Well on the yeah, next but, G, three generation, so third generation
if
network
never,
outside that area.
If you're rarely within 5Ks of the city, then you're paying your money for nothing.
No, because it's no more expensive than the standard dongle anyway.
Didn't you say it was $300?
No, I said, yeah. Well, $299. How much is the standard?
Everything Telstra
I'm
have.
I'm not sure how much the standard
outright.
Dongle is.
I'm talking outright.
Outright,
talking,
okay.
I think everything at Telstra sells is $299 when it comes to it own your own.
Okay, if that's the case, then it probably is a nice piece of future proofing. But if you're paying more for it, you've got to ask yourself whether you're actually going to get the use out of it. Over time, it will extend. But for the moment, you're only talking about a few Ks from the CBD in might only be eastern states. I'm not sure. You'd have to check.
I think they now say every capital city and some regional areas.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can't remember
the last
time I looked
at
the maps.
Yeah.
But also, they say a lot of things. Coverage maps are a work of fiction for all the telcos. It's ridiculous.
Work of fiction.
It is. I went to Mackay a couple of years ago, had a Vodafone wireless hotspot.
Well, that was your problem, wasn't it?
Yeah, no, I looked on the map. Visit and family, right? Looked on the map. All of Eastern Mackay, nicely covered, blah, blah, blah. I get there, nothing. I go into the Vodafone shop and the girl says, oh, yeah, everybody knows there's no coverage over there. And I'm like, well, why the hell does the map say? It wasn't her fault.
You were misled by a map.
But yeah, but the people in the shop knew. So if you're traveling and you're worried about your internet access, your mobile internet access before you get there, and it's mission critical, like you need it for work, don't just trust the coverage maps from the telcos. Ring the nearest dealer and ask them. Even ring the accommodation where you're staying, because I'm sure if one of the networks has terrible coverage, the people behind the reception at your accommodation have heard about it. Ring them. Get some local knowledge. Do not trust. Don't go just on the coverage maps, because sometimes they are a work of fiction.
You could also take two SIMs, different
but
carrier.
Even then, you don't know. I mean, I've been out camping in the middle of Nowheresville with friends and had to have three SIMs on hand because you never knew what was going to work.
Yeah, normally you've got a friend who covers, or all your friends
well,
cover most of the networks,
to, yeah.
don't they? So, anyone else got signal? No.
Yeah.
Can I borrow your internet? Yeah, good. Yeah, anyway. All right, you've got a view from the couch.
I have.
You have. Music downloads. That's a game changer at the moment, isn't it?
Not just downloads, music streaming as
streaming,
well.
Yeah. Anyway, here is this week's View from the Couch.
Adam Turner's View from the Couch.
This week's View from the Couch is a chat with Jim Butcher, who is the Communications Manager for subscription music service Spotify. Jim is in Australia laying the groundwork before Spotify launches here in the next few months. Spotify is highly regarded but faces stiff competition locally from the likes of RDO, Songle and Sony's Music Unlimited.
We like to think of ourselves, you know, we're sort of, the evolution of music. I think you had the vinyl, you had the tape, the CD, then you had downloads, and now we're moving on further, giving people access to, you know, to millions of, you know, we've got 50 million songs on Spotify. Music, we want it to be like water. So you can access music wherever you are, with your home, whether you're on a plane, on the train, if you're abroad, on holiday, wherever you are, you can take your music with you. Yeah, we've been going for nearly 3 years now. We launched in October 2008 in 7 markets, and we started off just on the desktop. We went mobile sort of a few months later, and we've been basically expanding the service from there. I mean, we want to be the best music service available.
Do you think that people will stop buying music once they use service?
The funny thing is, I mean, we've been talking about this a lot. There is a thought that, you know, that people may switch, but what we're finding is, the interesting point there is that when you say, will people stop buying music? When Spotify launched, our biggest aim was to be better than piracy, to combat piracy is to be better than it. You know, when the web came, it changed everything in music. You know, Napster was born, and people very, very quickly, you know, the young generation just stopped buying, you know, a lot of them just stopped buying music. They're going out to pirate, whether it be on Pirate Bay, whether it be on locker services, whether it be, even on YouTube. You see, you know, the young generation now, they're not buying music. So what we're trying to do, rather than not stop them buying music, we actually want them to re-engage them with legal music once again. Because the young generation, which makes up a major part of our audience, that's something they haven't done for a long time. They've been sort of, you know, looking to, they've been going to Pirate Bay, they've been going to YouTube, because for them it was easy. You know, they're logged in, and, you know, rather than going out, and, you know, they couldn't afford whatever it was, you know, $15, $20 per CD, they thought it was just a lot easier to just basically take it from Pirate Bay and the like. And we thought, okay, well, how do you combat that? Do you legislate? Did you go around closing people down? Or do you just try and do something that's a lot better? And that's what Daniel Ek, our CEO, and Martin Lawrenson, when they came up with Spotify, and that was their main aim. It's a pain party music, you know? I mean, you've got to search around. There's a load of rubbish you have to trawl through. There's a big chance of you getting viruses and bugs. And it's not a fun way to listen to music. So why don't we just give you a service that you can get all that music in better quality and still for free? I mean, I think the big difference between Spotify and other services is that we have a very, very strong free element to the service, which is, I think, is really, really important to get people away from piracy. And to, you know, are you going to go from piracy and then sort of jump straight into a sort of $10-$15 service? You know, maybe, you know, if you're a young kid, you want to try this stuff out first. Maybe you haven't got the money to start, and then once you start getting into Spotify, you start listening to it, you start realizing how quick and instant it is. You know, there's no buffering there. It's instant. It's like having 50 million songs on your laptop. And you start building playlists. You start sharing with friends on Facebook, on Twitter, you know, or on other text, whichever way, email. And then, you know, from that point that we're seeing people now, then, you know, the next step is to go, they want to take it with them. So they want to go mobile. And for that, you know, we offer Spotify Premium, which allows you to take it on your phone, wherever you go, and at the same time giving you other perks such as, you know, 320 kilobit per second sound, which is, you know, pretty much CD quality sound. And we just actually launched it on the mobile as well just last week. We've gone 320 on the mobile. But previous to that, it was 160. And now on mobile, you can get the same quality of sound as you can from Spotify on your desktop. And I think another thing that is key, what we're doing and other services are doing too, is the offline mode, which basically means you can take your music with you. You haven't got to worry about your data plan. You can download albums, songs, playlists directly onto your phone from Wi-Fi, and it's not impacting on your data plan at all, which is really good. And if you want to do it, use streaming as well on the go, that's fine too. If there's just a song you hear in a pub or whatever and you just want to play, then go for it. And we have three different levels on the mobile. We have like low bandwidth, we have high quality, and then we have what we're calling extreme, which is 320 on your mobile. And I say 320 just came out just last week.
Entertaining, informative, and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
So what future does the traditional radio station have in respect to music?
It's cheap and free. And it plays the rubbish that most people want to listen to.
Yeah, but if you can program your own songs and listen to your own stuff, like there's a lot of things.
You've got to have the bandwidth to do that.
Wow, it's only audio. But yes, Lena's right now.
She's tell that to the people who are still on dial-up or those stupid Telstra 20 meg plans that they haven't got off yet.
Really? I wonder how many of those still exist.
A lot, because Telstra don't tell you that there are better plans around.
Change your plans, guys, because you deserve
better. If
you're
on Telstra and you've been on that plan for more than 2 years, check and see what's available. Because they don't tell you when better plans come along.
How does it compare, Spotify that is, what we just heard about, to services like Grooveshark and to Pandora, assuming you can get them in your location?
Yeah, it really depends on what you're looking for. You'll get differences in what kind of sound quality they offer in sort of like kilobits per second and what devices they'll work with. Something like Ardio is a good example. It works on a lot of different devices and supports AirPlay and stuff like that. So it depends on the platform you want and the kind, whether you want to say, I want to listen to this Rolling Stones album. I want to listen to Let It Bleed by the Rolling Stones from the first track to the last track. Mm. Or whether you're happy to say, yeah, I like the Rolling Stones. Just play me music that's like the Rolling Stones and you'll get some Rolling Stones tracks and some other stuff mixed in there. So it kind of depends how much you want. And also some of them like Rhapsody and I think Spotify, you can listen by genre. You can say, oh, I like the blues. Just play me various blues tracks, and you can find a lot of that for free online, any of online radio stations. That's one thing that Ardio doesn't have that I thought was really strange, is you can't say to Ardio, you can't search by genre, and you can't say, you know, play me blues tracks. You can pick your John Lee Hooker and say, play me more music like this, but you still only get three or four artists sort of mixed in together. So most of them have a free trial of at least 7 days, if not longer. So it's, if you think it's the kind of thing that you want, it's worth trying out a few, but spend a bit of time to figure out what it is you actually want from it. Do you want to listen to specific albums? Do you want to listen to genres like music? Do you want to treat it like a music collection, or do you want to treat it like a radio station? Because that's when you'll find the different strengths and weaknesses, and you'll figure out which one's the right one for you. And you don't know until you use it for a little while how you'll use it. You might think you'll use it for one thing, but it's not until you actually get into it and realize what it does that you discover how you actually use it. And you'll probably find that it won't replace buying music, and you won't throw out your CDs. What it will
so
do
it's really
is
a radio
complement.
Station. It's sort of, it's giving you options and new music and stuff
like
that.
Yeah, it's kind of like having a completely programmable radio station at your fingertips. But it depends what kind of radio station you want as to which is the better service for you.
Mm.
And as they're saying, there's a lot of free options as well online that are worth looking at.
Everything's being diluted, isn't it? Because there's so many choices. It basically comes down to recommendations from family, friends, even people like us on the radio.
Most
you might
people,
hear things, give that a try and see what it sounds like.
Any kind of technology, most people, what they'll trust more than anything is a recommendation from a friend, which is good because it usually means you can test it out yourself and you can ask them specific questions that the vendor won't necessarily tell you because they may not want to admit the answer.
Yeah, I've noticed that with Pandora, which is one of my favorite music streaming platforms, it varies based on the device you're listening to it on, whether it be on one of the WDTV Lives, a different interface, different options, and then you can program it on your PC. And then on the PC, I've noticed you get a lot of ads thrown into it, whereas on the WD, different platforms, different ways of presenting the music.
They're
to
all
too.
Like that, yeah. And that Sonos is another good example. Sonos is a multi-room audio system, and Sonos has compatibility with a wide range of subscription music services. So you can use it with Songle, you can use it with Rhapsody, you can use it with RDO, you can use it with Spotify. And you will get sometimes a slightly different service, and you might be able to do things like RDO. If you're playing on one phone and then you start playing on another phone, it cuts off the first phone. But if you're playing on Sonos and then you start playing on another phone, it doesn't cut it off. So different devices get treated different ways. So you really need to figure out what you're looking for from the service and what kind of service you're going to use it with. Like you say, you want to use it with the WDTV Live. So straight away, that's like, here's a category that will work with that. These don't. And you're not going to pay for something if it doesn't work with everything you want it to work with. So it does take a bit of time. It's worth doing a bit of research. The great thing is there's no lock-in. You can use one for a couple of months, find a better one. Ditch the first one, move to the second one. You haven't spent money on hardware. You haven't signed in for a contract. So there's nothing stopping you trying a few out. To find the one that you want. Don't feel like you're locked in.
Do they have a free version where you can get the feel for it first?
Most of them seem to have a trial of some length.
Yeah. Because I think that's important, the way you can sit down there and the thing, once you can go back to Pandora, I like and dislike button, so it actually learns from your input and then throws up good stuff at you.
You don't want to have to every 5 minutes, 45 minutes go, I need to find a new album to play, which is what I do at home, because I just listen to iTunes and I listen to the same albums all the time because it's my favorite music, right? But what you probably want to be able to do is, like a radio station, turn it on at the start of the day and know that you'll hear what you want for the rest of the day. So anything that has that like and dislike thing and then gets to know what kind of stuff you like is probably a good thing. And also a lot of them, now they talk about music discovery is a big thing. They say it's like going to Amazon. People who bought this.
Yeah. It's like TiVo.
Like TiVo. Mm. So you can discover new music, and some of them let you follow people. So if you've got a friend who you know has got a good taste in music, you can follow them, and you don't get all the stupid Facebook updates, this is what I had for lunch, blah, 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 which is good because we don't need another one of them. But what you do get is, there's a new Foo Fighters album out that I didn't know about. Oh, hey, this guy's discovered some old band that, you know, were the inspiration for Nirvana or something like that. And so you discover this new music through other people, and that's I found when I've spoken to RDO, when I've spoken to Spotify, that's the big angle that they all push.
Mm.
Having a big CD collection at your fingertips is really only scratching the surface. They do a lot more than that.
I worry a little bit about these services that have the like and don't like buttons.
Yeah.
Because on any given day, I might not like I might not like that track today, but I might want to hear it tomorrow.
And you can't go back and change it. There was this great story 10 or 15 years ago. Someone, journalist, wrote a story that my TiVo thinks I'm gay. They watched certain shows, but then they tried to compensate. So then they started watching all these war documentaries and stuff. And so then it started taping all these things about Hitler and stuff, and they couldn't balance it out because once it started to learn about them and they tried to compensate. So, yeah, you're right. If there's a like and a dislike thing...
I've never thought about that, Grant.
You need a way to modify it. It's like the autocorrect on your phone. You need a way to go in and say, no, I screwed up. That is actually the word that I wanted, you know. Because once it learns about you, and if you try to compensate by swinging the other way, you end up with a very mixed up.
You would think that some of those services would have a web portal where you could come in and do tweaks to your likes and dislikes. After all, it's about
amazing, but that's a hassle, though.
I think you probably would just have to close your account and start again.
It'd only be a handful of Uber nerds like us that would ask for that. Other people would just live with it, or as you say, start again. There should be a nuke everything and, you know, nuke everything from orbit and start
first
again. At least that.
So at least all your credit card numbers and logins are all the same and all your devices around the house. You have to reprogram everything.
A like button, a dislike button, and a not now button. And it tries again.
A not today button.
I've got a headache in a few weeks.
Yeah, you could plug that into Twitter so you could tweet that every Friday.
Exactly.
Not today, music.
Yeah.
Oh, dear. All right. In other news, because we're running out of time for this edition of Tech Talk Radio, NASA has powered down its last mainframe. They've put the cat out, the milk out, and all that sort of stuff. But the space agency has switched off its IBM Z9 mainframe.
Aww.
They're mothballing everything. Chief Information Officer Linda Cruton. Said in a blog post that the environment had been kept alive this long to support applications that we would know would soon be retired.
Mm-hmm.
And they're putting their applications out to pasture too. So, a bit of a sad day because NASA is not as relevant as it used to be.
NASA is not as funded as it used to be.
No, all of them. Correct. Couldn't have put it better myself.
Which might not quite mean the same thing.
Now, forgetting our...
I hope they've had a thought for the historical data and that...
Oh, I'm sure it'll all head off to the Smithsonian or something like that.
As long as, yeah, I've got a horrible fear that some of it might hand off to the local tip.
Oh, really? That's worrying.
But if they've closed down the mainframe, that's the last machine that could read those old reel-to-reel tapes or something like that. It's just scary.
I've still got punch cards from school. You know the old Fortran punch cards from the computer club? They were great. Used to do calendars on them. I don't know what I'd ever do with them, but I've gone there for old time's sake.
You are older than me.
Thank you. Yeah, we went to the same school and you have no idea what I'm talking about.
No.
Remember the old PDP 11s? No, he's glazed
over. I know what a PDP 11 is. Yeah, I don't think
They still had them a couple of years ago. Melbourne, the train line had them.
Oh, really?
Sorry, I've had a mental blank.
Is that why they kept crashing?
Yeah, no, the Metro. The Metro had them down in bunkers down under the city loop. I spoke to a guy once who was maintaining them. I think they were PDP 11s.
Oh,
yeah. I'm not sure what they were doing with them, but they were still running them. So, and there's one over at Monash behind glass. It's like a museum piece. But there's still a handful of them up and running.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. There'd be a few buffs out there to keep them all going. They were great.
No, not just for laughs.
It's ancient applications. Somebody in 1960 something wrote the application that turns the red lights green and the green lights red, and it's done the same job ever since. Yes. And no one it's never needed to be
mission
upgraded.
Critical stuff that just works, and they don't.
Is that what Telstra's using for flex cabs?
Oh, who knows?
Hello to all of our Telstra listeners this evening. Twitter got a satellite. Did you know?
Yay!
What? Yeah.
Twitter's got a bird.
Twitter's got its own bird.
Wow.
Absolutely.
I want Twitter to have everything it wants.
Twitter has stuck a deal with two large satellite operations to give subscribers the ability to push in the most remote locations in Australia and around the world. Sorry, publish is what I meant to say. The Iridium and I think it's Thuraya satellite subscribers will be able to use Twitter in situations where they lack access to 3G networks or phone lines. So
Iridium's
if you're in a remote,
they finally found a use
network.
For Iridium, did they?
Yeah.
Twitter.
Yeah.
The
so
US military and Twitter are who's using the Iridium.
That's brilliant. That's really good. Imagine the safety aspects to that.
And the truth is that Twitter in the US found it was the only practical way to pull all that data in from Lena's Twitter feed in Australia.
Yeah, that'll take the Iridium satellites down.
Burst of flames in the sky to the Iridium satellite. It's just committing suicide rather than doing all these
things.
Think of
it this way. Bushfire situation. The police have a way to get information out.
No, I'm sorry.
You're arguing with old school radio guys. You've picked the wrong people to have this fight with.
I'm sorry. If Twitter is the way we're going to do our emergency services communications, then that's
isn't
the
that
end
better
of,
than nothing?
That is the end of life.
Not
on
to
Earth.
Rely
no.
solely on it, but no. if everything's not no. everything else isn't working, it makes a good fail safe, surely, right?
No, I'm agreeing with the guys on this one because then people think it's going to work. They rely on something that's unreliable,
that's just not
going to
work,
and then they die. because Twitter didn't tell them to
leave.
No,
it's a fail-safe, not a...
No, it's not a fail. Not a fail-safe has to be trustworthy.
Yes, a fail-safe is something that keeps working no matter what. Twitter is the opposite.
Graham and I are going to finish each other's sentences at this point. I'm going to get our wrestling masks out. We're going to take you down.
The fail-safe for reliable communication is the 774 transmitter at Sydenham.
Yep.
That's the fail-safe. That's the one that will keep
working. Fair enough. But the more ways you can get the message, the better, I reckon.
Actually, you're better to consolidate into one reliable way so people go to the one source and get the right information that always works. When you're talking about life and death, it's better to do less and do it right. That's what I think. And
I'm sorry, AM analog radio, 774 out of Sydenham is the way to go.
Gets in like liquid into this chalk.
That's it. Yep.
It does. It gets absolutely everywhere.
I'm still showing my age. Infrastructure. All you need is a couple of AA batteries and a transistor radio. Yep.
Couple of cans and a piece of string.
I got a new radio the other day. It's digital, but it has AM on it, and I can tune to any low frequency that I choose to, whether it be 774 or any other station, wherever I might happen to be on the planet.
Mm.
It's good. I think you're right, Graham.
It's like last week.
I know I'm right.
Last week you said that where we hear our news first is on the radio.
That's a compliment.
Yeah.
And where I hear my news first is on Twitter.
Who cares if Twitter told me that someone died half an hour before someone else told me?
Yeah, Whitney Houston came to you before everybody else for half an hour. Who cares?
That doesn't make Twitter better.
No, I didn't. Did I say it? No, did I say it?
You didn't.
No,
I did not. You just touched a nerve, all right?
Keep your nerves out of it.
Speaking of credible news sources, there was an article on Fox News that Whitney Houston scams flooded Facebook and Twitter afterwards. Were you responsible?
Me?
Yeah.
No.
Scammer.
I didn't even tweet once about Whitney.
Didn't you?
No, not once.
That's unusual for you.
Yeah, well, you know, everyone else was. Didn't have to.
Yeah, you felt you didn't have to.
That argument's never stopped you before.
I'm about to say.
Well, yeah.
Anyway, on other things, is this another nail in the coffin for BlackBerry? Because the US government is no longer...
Is that thing still going?
Yeah, exactly. They've decided to ditch BlackBerry, all of their departments over there. Because it used to be a really good thing.
The US government has.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
But they don't like the fact that the Canadians control it. It drives them nuts.
Well, they're now...
It'd be like Australians having to live with all their email going through Auckland. They just would refuse to do it.
It'd be delayed. But guess which brand they've chosen? The brand of fruit is now going to supply all of their mobile computing devices.
It's the beginning of the end. I think I saw this in the prequel to The Matrix.
Oh, dear. And in Europe, they're all having...
Deep breaths, Lena. Deep breaths. You'll be all right.
I think Twitter is great.
We're not bagging Twitter anymore. We're bagging Apple now.
I'm still mad about it.
Keep up.
I am. I'm still mad about it.
Yeah, she's two things behind us. Anyway.
She's still going in the chat.
I am angry
about the right thing, damn it.
I am.
Lena will be in the chat after the show talking Twitter and with whips.
And then whips in the car park.
We'll be long gone by that stage. I was just about to say, protests across Europe over web privacy treaty and things like that. I haven't really caught up with much about this, but is this part of more of the EU issues that they're having over there? Tens of thousands of protesters took part in rallies across Europe last Saturday night against international anti-piracy agreements that they feel will curb their freedom to download movies and music for free. Is this just more of the same, just in different parts of the world?
I'm not sure what you... I haven't read up about this particular issue, but it sounds like that they're a little bit worried that the Americans think that the internet and the world in general is their jurisdiction.
Oh, is that what that's all about?
Yes.
Yeah.
They want to block websites in such a way.
Is this a SOFA-related issue, is it? It's gone on extended from that.
They'll do blocks that will dissipate out through the DNS system.
Yeah.
So basically, if America says a website doesn't exist, by default, that will sort of spread to everybody else. And the fact that they can just flick a button and make a URL disappear disturbs people. Sorry, a domain disappear disturbs people.
Yeah. Oh, well, watch this space for European developments. But I think it's a bit of a foregone conclusion. But that's my personal opinion. Hey, Lena, Twitter was sued in Australia for defamation for the first time over some comments someone made.
Yeah, good luck.
You just watch yourself there, Lena.
I better say. No names, no pack drill here. Wasn't you, was it?
I haven't accused anyone of running any hate blogs, so I'm not going to get in trouble.
No, that's right. This man came up and, an ABC journalist.
Just watch yourself.
Yeah.
Watch yourself. Careful.
Yeah, defamation is uncharted territory on the internet.
If you say something dumb... And I'm a good example, although I can get sued.
But no, you just get on television programs.
If you say something dumb, where you said it and how you said it isn't always that relevant. If you said the wrong thing, you said the wrong thing.
Got to be able to prove whatever you say.
Yeah.
But again,
I don't think there's a different law for Twitter or a different rule for Twitter because there's not.
No, Twitter. Just, Twitter is just another way of getting a message out, but... Yep. But Twitter themselves were sued rather than the person who made the comment, and I'm not sure about that.
Yeah, that's what we should be arguing.
That's like suing Telstra over a phone call that was made over their telephones.
Yeah,
no, but you can if I defame Lena in the paper, I think she can sue me and the. She can sue me and the paper.
Yeah, but the newspaper has an editorial process. The newspaper doesn't blindly print everything you send them.
You can blame the newspaper, but you can't blame Twitter for publishing my comment.
Because Twitter... Isn't there a distinction there?
Yeah, yeah, no, I'm agreeing with you. I can see the line that you're drawing.
And, the overseer.
And that could be the difference.
The newspaper has an editor and sub-editors.
You can pick the editor and say, it was your fault, you let this through.
Yeah.
You can't point the finger at someone at Twitter and said, this defamed person B, and you let it through. So,
The same thing applies to the radio station here. That, you know, when we talk on the radio, we have to abide by the rules, and the radio station should... You know, has a process to keep us under control. It has policies that we have to abide by.
Riding crops.
And, so if we defame somebody on the radio, then the radio station could become a target for legal action.
Good.
But that's because the station has some control over us. The station doesn't blindly put to air whatever we happen to say.
No.
Yeah, I think you're right. Suing Twitter is a bit silly. Mm. But people saying stupid things on Twitter because they think they're above the law is also silly.
If
you defame someone, you defame someone. You know, don't say, oh, but I did it this way and not that way. You're going to get done.
No, if you say something that's not true about somebody that hurts their reputation, that person's got every right to
be able to back up everything they say.
We have laws in this country for all these sorts of things, which is very good. This is Tech Talk Radio.
We still have laws, despite the efforts of the United States.
Gadget website of the week coming up after this.
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show.
Tech Talk Radio.
Adobe's going to stop doing Flash. That's pretty good. What links would you go to watch free-to-air television?
Not me.
I was at GCAP, which is the Game Connect Asia Pacific conference.
I told you it was GC something.
It's exciting times, isn't it?
The ACCC doesn't do anything either, to be fair.
And Andrew's just grimaced because he's one of those web designers that thinks that he should have control over everything about the way a website looks.
Entertaining, informative, and independent.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
In this house, we obey the laws of thermodynamics!
Cool!
Tech Talk Radio's Gadget of the Week.
And this week's Gadget of the Week could leave a bit of a bad taste in your mouth, actually. It's a Bluetooth-enabled toothbrush. Yes, Dr. Ron, wanted a Bluetooth-enabled toothbrush. It's called the Beam Brush, and it comes with an app. It times how long you take to brush your teeth. It sends you a warning if you haven't brushed your teeth within a certain amount of time. It's kind of like one of those exercise apps that tracks everything you've done for your toothbrush.
This could be good for parents and kiddies. Have you ever done your teeth?
Yeah.
Yes, mummy, I have. Let me log into my... Where's my iPhone?
You just wave it around. It's like sitting on the couch and doing wee jogging by just waving the thing up and down. You just do the same thing. But so it's going to be out, I think, next month for about $50. There is an iOS and an Android app to go with it.
Oh, good. They've covered both of them.
And you can track your toothbrushing with your phone, and that's pretty sad in my book.
Well, I don't know. I reckon... I just thought maybe for a parenting type sort of thing, that's going to be pretty
good. Yeah, I can see some merit there if you're trying to give your kids a hard time about brushing their teeth. And actually tells you the average amount of time you spend brushing your teeth and rates you out of 5 stars.
Oh, even better. So if you get 5 stars on the fridge door, you get a special treat, some chocolate maybe.
Defeating the purpose
Email
entirely.
Report.
Absolutely. Yeah. All right, there you go. There's the Tech Talk Radio.
Beam Brush.
Gadget of the Week.
Here it is, everybody. The world's greatest website.
Tech Talk Radio website of the week.
Now, here's something a little different. This is a graphical representation of what's happening newsworthiness in the world. It gives you the full ability to sift and sort about the different sort of genres of news that you're after, but it brings it all up on the screen as a rather squarish, blockish sort of look. You can choose countries or you can choose topics.
What's the URL, Andrew?
I know, it's called newsmap.jp. everyone typing. That's new, one word. You can put W's in front of it if you like. Newsmap.jp. And then you can select Australia up the top. And the most important or the most relevant news story, which everyone's talking about, is the biggest and the boldest on the screen.
Yeah, but that could just be Whitney Houston dying or something. It doesn't necessarily mean it's the most important story. It just means it's the one that most people are going on about.
It is. It is, but it's as Google surfs the web and does Google News and all that sort of stuff, that's where that information, I believe, is coming from.
The biggest story for Australia at the moment is about Jeremy Lin, the basketballer. Well, that's my case.
That's pretty big. We were watching that today. He's doing amazing things over there. But then again, that's what everyone's talking about. Well, take it with a grain of salt then, gang. That's the Tech Talk Radio website of the week, and it's called newsmap.jp. And, yeah, I think you dialed up, didn't you, Graham?
Yeah, that's good.
It's just a fairly easy interface to click down. You can dig down through it and see what it's all about.
You can turn off world news.
You can. You can turn off. It's fully configurable. Give it a whirl. See what you think. Woohoo!
Tech Talk Radio, app of the week.
Discover music.
This is like what Adam was talking about.
This is exactly the sort of thing that Adam was talking about. This is for the iPad, iPhone, iPod Touch, those sorts of things. Apple devices that play music. Discover, D-I-S-C-O-V-R, without an E, Discover Music. It's a $1.99 app through the iTunes Store. Discover lets you see how the music you love is connected and makes it easy to find great new bands and artists that are similar to what you like. To get started, simply type in the name of a band or artist you love, and we'll show you some similar music to check out. Bands or artists that are similar are connected by lines. Just tap on one you like, and the map will grow organically to show other similar artists.
Nice.
You can double tap on a band or artist to see more info about them, watch their videos, check out their bio, or read the latest reviews or blogs about their music. When you discover a band or artist you like, you can share it with your friends via Twitter or Facebook, and save it to your favourites. So that's Discover, D-I-S-C-O-V-R, Discover Music on the iTunes Store for $1.99.
I saw it in action. There's a movies one as well. Discover Movies.
Discover,
you can play that one as well.
Oh, there you go.
So very interesting. Like a genre of a movie, follow, dig down and click onto it. There you go.
Can you dig it?
No, ma'am. We're musicians.
My, the meatloaf!
Bond. James Bond.
You can't handle the truth!
And the hits just keep on coming.
The Odd Spot on Tech Talk Radio.
Russian polling cameras face DDoS attacks. That's not a headline I thought I'd ever read. Hackers have tried to crash a vast network of web cameras that Vladimir Putin has ordered to allay fears of vote rigging in the March presidential election, a deputy minister has said on Friday.
Hack the cameras.
Yeah. Putin, facing the biggest protest of his 12-year rule after a disputed December parliamentary election, said the opposition said was rigged, ordered 182,000 web cameras to be installed at the 91,000 polling
How
stations.
How many? That's a truckload.
It was a lot.
A metric truckload.
That's crazy.
Official results show Putin's ruling party won 49.3% of the vote. Opposition activists have shown dozens of videos shot by volunteers as evidence of ballot shuffling. But Deputy Communications Minister said the system operated by state-controlled Rostelecom had already fallen victim to regular distributed denial of service attacks originating in Russia.
Wow.
So it's a bit of...
How bizarre is that?
Civil unrest.
Odd. At the best of times.
They're making their point digitally.
Yeah, exactly. Why not? They'll start on the FBI next. Anyway, that is the show for this week. Thank you, Adam, for coming in all the way from all the way you come from fill in for a person who lives just down the road, who's otherwise been disposed. I'm sure he'll
Happy
be back
be
next
here.
Week. So thanks for coming in off the bench. Lena, lovely to have you back now
Thank
that you've
you.
Moved. It's
Thank
been
you
good.
Much.
We gave you a double whack this week, so that's good. We're all up to date.
Excellent.
We'll look forward to it. Graham, I missed our fight this week. We should try it again next week.
We'll have another fight another day.
Yeah, exactly. Well, it wasn't a fight. It was just a heated debate, which was very good. Anyway, this is Tech Talk Radio. Thanks for joining us. Same time next week. Until then, bye for now.
You've been listening to Tech Talk Radio, brought to you each and every week by a group of dedicated professionals from within the media, broadcasting, IT and telecommunications industries. The team consists of executive producer Andrew McComb, producer Dr. Ron, regular panellists Graham Callaghan, Mark Diggins and Lena Van Deventer. Expert opinion from Adam Turner, and our US correspondent is Lydia Davis. Post-production facilities courtesy of Evolving Communications. Podcast production by GC Support and Shaq West. Tech Talk Radio is broadcast, recorded and streamed live to the world each and every Monday night at 8 p.m. from the studios of 3WBC in Melbourne. The crew wish to thank all the stations around Australia and around the world that broadcast the show. Tech Talk Radio is available for syndication on your local station. Contact us for the two-hour version or access the one-hour show on the Community Radio Network. Visit cbaa.org.au for further details. For sponsorship and advertising, call 03 8682 9099 or visit our website, techtalkradio.com.au, for more information. Don't forget, you can follow the panellists on Twitter, join us live each Monday night in the Tech Talk Radio chat, and solve your issues on the Tech Talk Radio forum. This has been a production of Tech Talk Radio Vic and is subject to copyright and applicable laws and may not be rebroadcast without approval.